Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 434, side one, titled Triumph of the Shill, part two, Reichstag Wildfire, question mark. This is being recorded on November 10th of the year 2003. Before I begin, let me remind you that there will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record 434 in the Spitfire, on the Spitfire web section, in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Now, this program is going to be about the impending governorship of Arnold Schwarzenegger. The title, again, is Triumph of the Shill, Part 2, Reichstag Wildfire? Question mark. From time to time, and I guess with increasing frequency as things worsen, this is going to be one of those programs that is sort of painful to do, not just because the subject material is in and of itself unpleasant, but also because it's one of those programs that going into, I know I'm going to be derided for to a certain extent. If one is to be ahead of the curve, then one is to sort of, to a certain extent at least, receive the Copernicus treatment. If this were the 16th century, the church has declared mathematics to be the work of the devil, and you've seen the calculations of Copernicus indicating that church dogma is absolutely wrong and that, in fact, the earth revolves around the sun, whereas church dogma had it that the earth was the center of the universe with concentric circles embracing the orbits of the moon, the sun, and the stars around the earth. Well, if you've seen the calculations of Copernicus and you're going to advance that, you're going to be deemed utterly insane and a heretic. We now know that Copernicus was right, but sometimes that's not all that comforting. And this is one of those shows that, again, I go into with a certain amount of, not exactly trepidation, but disappointment. Because basically this is one of those shows that people are going to, or regret perhaps, this is one of those shows that people are going to say, the guy's nuts. Sometimes there are some difficult questions to ask, and we're going to be taking a look at Schwarzenegger's ascension. And we're going to be taking a look at some comparisons. Obviously, the title of the program, Triumph of the Shill, Part 2, is taken from the famous Nazi propaganda film, Triumph of the Will, by Leni Riefenstahl. We're going to be talking about that film. Riefenstahl recently passed away at the age of 101. We're going to be talking about the Triumph of the Will, and we're going to be taking a look at the scripting of Arnold Schwarzenegger's impending gubernatorial administration. We're going to be taking a look at the difference between the folksy, smiling realities of Arnold Schwarzenegger and what he appears to be about behind the scenes, which is something altogether cynical and very, very different from his popular everyman image. And I'm also going to be asking a very difficult question, one that I do not have an answer for, hence the question mark at the end of the subtitle of this program. But the recent devastating wildfires in Southern California, by the way, which were started by arson to a large extent, have in many ways altered not only the physical landscape in California, but the fiscal landscape and also the political landscape as well. We're going to be taking a look at these wildfires, which, as a matter of fact, were started by arson. They are therefore not natural acts at all, but rather criminal acts and, in point of fact, terrorist acts, albeit not necessarily by an organized group, perhaps just by, quote, lone nut, unquote, terrorists. That's a possibility. But in noting this emphatically interrogatory aspect of tonight's broadcast, for those who might be inclined to dismiss that, bear in mind that these events were not only criminal acts which produced billions of dollars in damage and about 20 deaths, they were specifically terrorist acts as well, albeit not necessarily by an organized group. One of the things that I'm going to be doing in tonight's program is to ask the question and to look at the possibility of whether or not those wildfires might have been deliberately started by people whose interests are aligned with those of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Was this a predetermined act of terrorism? And it certainly was an act of terrorism, whether or not it was predetermined. Was it intended to provide a political cover to a certain extent for Arnold Schwarzenegger? Was it intended to empower policies of the Bush administration? And was it intended to give Arnold Schwarzenegger an ideal spotlight for his first trip to Washington, which basically was scripted very, very tightly by Arnold Schwarzenegger and could not have played to a better audience under better circumstances? We'll be taking a look at that. We'll be taking a look at some of the techniques used by Leni Riefenstahl and some of the musings of Friedrich Nietzsche about the great leader, and we'll be doing that later on in the program. We're going to begin by reading the transcript of a remarkably thoughtful and very eloquent, characteristically thoughtful broadcast. This is from Letter from America by Alistair Cook. This is available on the BBC website, and Letter from America from October 13th of 2003 is titled, "The Election of Arnold Schwarzenegger is Not a Joke." And Alistair Cook's Letter from America, by the way, is the longest-running BBC program. It first ran on March 24th of 1946. In his musings on the election of Arnold Schwarzenegger and the recall, Alistair Cook is characteristically eloquent, characteristically hard-hitting, yet at the same time very thoughtful and avoids being a polemicist. He ruminates about the meaning of the Schwarzenegger political ascension, and as the title indicates, again, the title is "The Election of Arnold Schwarzenegger is Not a Joke." The broadcast by Alistair Cook muses about California's changing political nature, about the fact that white people are now in a minority in California. He ruminates about the anger of the voting electorate and their desire to take out their frustration on the incumbent, whereas the problems, the economic problems, are not Gray Davis's fault. He's not a particularly good governor, and he's certainly uninspiring, but he's not a particularly bad governor. And the things that took place, such as a power crisis, which was deliberately created and I believe was part of a deliberate destabilization of California, and other things were actually the result of legislative initiatives that were undertaken by his Republican predecessor, Pete Wilson, who was Arnold Schwarzenegger's campaign manager and, for a period of time after the election, was his chief spokesperson. I would also note that many of the appointments that Schwarzenegger has made were Wilson staffers, and so far it looks like Schwarzenegger is going to be a classic Republican, and that is not good at all. But Alistair Cook, in this Letter from America, talks about the history of recall in California, about the changing nature of relationships between the races in the United States, and he talks about the meaning of the ascension of Arnold Schwarzenegger. It is a more politically and psychologically complex analysis than most that have been undertaken to date. And I would encourage listeners to go to the website. It's news.bbc.co.uk. The full URL will be on the description for this broadcast for FTR 434. By the time the description is up, which will be roughly a week from the airing of the program. Alistair Cook's Letter from America of October 13th of 2003, "The Election of Arnold Schwarzenegger is Not a Joke." California spoke last Tuesday, and what California said will not be known until we find out whether the recall procedure is an extension of democracy or a mockery of it. One thing we can be sure of already about the electoral landslide in the most populous state in the Union, 33 millions, the state whose economy is larger than that of all but four existing nations, the state which time and again has signaled a change in the direction of popular prejudice, is that the rise to its governorship of Arnold Schwarzenegger is not the joke it was in the beginning of the recent headlong campaign of, wait for it, 135 candidates. Before we think over the election, let's remind ourselves who the Californians are and what the recall procedure is all about. 2 years ago, the ethnic majority of California tipped over from white to colored. That's to say, just under 50% of its population is white, just over half is Latino, black, or Asian, quote, Oriental, is not an acceptable word anymore. When I say acceptable, I'd like to recall the permissible changes in my American lifetime of the proper word for what so late as the Second World War were called, without offense, either Negroes or Coloreds. And then if there is a decisive date of change, it has to be May 1954, what a celebration in prospect next spring, when the United States Supreme Court pronounced the historic ruling about the plight of an 8-year-old Negro girl and having to cross a railroad track and walk miles to a black school, since she was not allowed to go to a nearby white school. The day of that ruling, the case of Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, was the beginning of racial integration in the political and social life of America. Certainly from that time on, there arose a lyrical cry among the Negro people, quote, black is beautiful, unquote. And for the next 30 or 40 years, black was the correct word. Negro, worse, nigger, had become so unspeakable that to this day all public figures, when they want to indicate an impermissible vulgarism, refer to the N-word, unquote. But after a decade or two, blacks themselves seem to want a more specific, grander nomenclature. And African-American was, you might recall, recently demanded, if not required, in formal speech and writing. When that happened, I couldn't help recalling the funny, awful day in the middle 1940s when my old friend and mentor, the most famous talent in American journalism, Mr. H.L. Mencken, one day wrote in a chapter of his memoirs about his hometown Baltimore about fond recollections of the local African Americans, unquote, a usage that caused an uproar in the Negro community of more cities than Baltimore. In fact, the most prestigious of all colored national organizations, the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, brought to the floor at one of its conventions a resolution damning and blasting Mencken as a bigot, fascist, and, I believe, the new villain, racist, unquote. The California ballots were printed in 7 languages. One of them was Eskimo. You'll see by now that if all generalizations are false, including this one, very few generalizations can be made about the character of a Californian. What we can say with confidence is that California has 58 counties and that for the better part of a century, the southernmost counties voted Republican, though not the largest city, Los Angeles. The northern counties, taking in the northern, say, 400 miles, are invincibly Democrat, including certainly the city of San Francisco. The figure that's important to memorize is that in last Tuesday's election, only about 50% of the qualified voters voted. So half of the registered Californians aren't interested in politics or don't care about domestic matters, no matter how fervently they may worry about foreign policy. Now, what exactly is this procedure of recall? I ought to resketch an account to listeners who missed the history of it that I did almost 2 months ago, and which several authorities have told me had not been seen or published elsewhere. Well, to my great surprise, when I started to bone up on the word and the custom, I found that recall came into being just 100 years ago in Los Angeles, then a city of only 50,000 that was so rowdy and ill-governed, one murder every day, that the city fathers decided on a drastic step. They found time and again that they'd elected to an influential city post so many men who turned out to be crooks or grafters that they vowed to write in an amendment to the city charter authorizing a special election to be held after a certain number of voters had signed a petition to throw out an elected official and replace him before his elected term had expired. Governor Davis was in only the first year of his second term, and the main charge against him is that he's responsible for the largest deficit of any state. I should say, it's a moot point whether a governor or a president, for that matter, should be held responsible for the health or sickness of the budget. But it's long been the assumption of the American voter that he is, for all practical purposes, infallible. Just as in American football, when a team keeps on losing matches, you fire the coach. Herbert Hoover was in some ways a very good president. Many of the fiscal and financial reforms adopted by Franklin Roosevelt were thought up by Hoover. But Wall Street crashed, and the Great Depression set in on Hoover's watch, and he was ignominiously fired. After Los Angeles had the recall idea a century ago, it was put into the state constitutions of three or four western states where cattle rustlers, crooked lawyers, claim jumpers, or other miscreants were recalled. When news of this experiment got to Washington, it was debated, but not for long. President Theodore Roosevelt brought his great authority to declare that it was a quick fix, an easy way of venting political revenge on elected officers, an actual evasion of the democratic process. The chief argument against it, indeed, was memorably stated by Alexander Hamilton more than a century earlier when the Founding Fathers were writing the Constitution. The great question was, on what grounds could a president be justly impeached? After some strenuous legal wrangling, Hamilton held out for a minimum charge of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. By applying a lesser standard, he said, the president would hold his office at the whim of the Senate. While many today, governors around the country, governors with heavy deficits, which is most, are wincing at the California result, there are influential Democrats already thinking of working up a petition to recall Mr. Schwarzenegger if he turns out to be as inept as they fear or hope. When I first heard this, I thought it was a late-night television joke, but within 24 hours of the result, Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat and probably the most popular politician in California, said that the recall Schwarzenegger petition should be held in abeyance. Many serious politicians, Republicans and Democrat, were blithely convinced before last Tuesday that Mr. Schwarzenegger, who the Democratic leader says hasn't a clue about how to govern, would at best squeak in by a hair's breadth majority. Well, a landslide was a painful puzzle, especially after the disclosure by 15 young women that they had been intimately groped and fondled by the famous movie Muscle Man. Not too many years ago, the first proof of that sort of behavior would have produced the hasty withdrawal of a candidate. As it was, Mr. Schwarzenegger shouted out loud that he had done bad things in his past, and he apologized to all the ladies. The accompanying groupies cheered him loud and long. Perhaps the sexual harassment charges came in too late. Perhaps in our decaying civilization, not enough people care whether or not a governor or a president has any moral authority at all. Anyway, it made no difference whatever to the result, and the predicted defection of the women's vote didn't happen. There is, however, a general agreement, irrespective of party, that Schwarzenegger's landslide was an angry vote against the men, the people in power, who cannot seem to lead us out of our continuing woes, the economy, joblessness, corporate greed, the usual impatience every 3 years or so at getting the war over by Christmas. In a simpler word, a strong vote against incumbents. Some thoughtful, if pessimistic, people see in the Schwarzenegger triumph a darker vision. He has admitted to his early admiration of Hitler, especially of Hitler's power to rouse a despairing, poverty-stricken people and lead them on to visionary heights. The thing he most admired about Hitler was the Führerprinzip, the strong leader principle. Schwarzenegger wants to be that strong leader. So we must wait and see whether in the course of his governorship we shall see democracy invigorated or the emergence of the first American Führer. That again from Alistair Cook's Letter from America of October 13, 2003, available, that transcript, on the BBC website at news.bbc.co.uk. And we're going to be talking about Schwarzenegger's manipulation of the media, his triumph of the will, so to speak, and his recent trip to Washington, D.C. One of the things I want to note is the glaring contrast between the smiling Schwarzenegger populist slash everyman persona and the realities of Schwarzenegger, the political animal, as he is beginning to give evidence. I would note that he is not a politician, does not have a formal political past, but his ideological past is, at best, disturbing. In For the Record program number 422 and in number 429, I spoke about the meeting For the Record 422 and 429, I talked about the meeting that Arnold Schwarzenegger had with, among others, former Los Angeles Mayor Richard Reardon, by the way, a member of the Knights of Malta, an elite an order of Vatican Knights, and now the Education Secretary for California. Richard Reardon met with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Kenneth Lay of Enron, and Michael Milken, among others. And on a couple of days before the recall election on October 7th, it came out, courtesy of journalist Greg Palast, that, in fact, internal Enron memos indicated that what Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing in meeting with Kenneth Lay and others was to basically work out a way to get rid of the lawsuit that had been filed by then Lieutenant Governor, I guess still for a while, Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante against the lords of energy, so to speak, the lords of electricity, who had deliberately created the electricity crisis, which helped to bring down Gray Davis. I noted in For the Record 429 that just after being elected, Arnold Schwarzenegger proposed to deregulate electricity again, something he hadn't mentioned about doing during the brief recall campaign. We're going to turn now to Greg Palast's article titled Told You So from the Eureka Report. It's titled Told You So, subtitled The Eureka Report. This is Greg Palast, Journalism and Film. It's datelined Wednesday, October 15th of 2003. I am deeply unhappy to report on the accuracy of our report on the success of Ken Lay's plan to have his governor, Mr. Schwarzenegger, sabotage state lawsuits against the electricity cartel. The following is just in from journalist Catherine Eureka. Arnold to settle lawsuits for pennies on the dollar. The Eureka Report has learned that only 3 days after Mr. Schwarzenegger won his victory in California, an aide announced that the governor-elect intends to settle pending energy fraud lawsuits. This apparently includes the suit filed by Cruz Bustamante under the California Statute Civil Code Section 17200 of the Unfair Practices Act. The purpose of the act, quote, is to safeguard the public against the creation or perpetuation of monopolies and to foster and encourage competition, unquote. The act expressly prohibits unfair, dishonest, deceptive, destructive, fraudulent, and discriminatory practices by which fair and honest competition is destroyed or prevented, unquote. According to news talk show host Bernie Ward of KGO Radio San Francisco, who reported the story Friday night on his show, October 10th, 2003, Schwarzenegger's aide stated that the governor-elect's administration did not want to be saddled with someone else's lawsuits. The Unfair Practices Act, however, has provisions that require businesses who profit from unfair practices to pay the victims those profits. Although the act does not authorize recovery of damages in a representative action, according to Hillary N. Rowan, an attorney from the law firm of Thalen, Reed & Priest, quote, the plaintiff, who need not have been harmed by the challenged conduct, may seek injunctive and restitutionary relief, including the disgorgement of profits on behalf of all those injured, unquote. See Hillary Rowan's article. This provision would make the power companies who profited an estimated $9 billion from the California energy scam the losers. In the meantime, Claire Cooper of the Sacramento Bee reported Friday on another lawsuit in the federal court. She reported the judges from the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals seemed skeptical of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's, or FERC's, quote, contention that it acted legally 3 years ago when it relied on competition among energy wholesalers to determine the cost of California's power supply and did not require them to file the rates they would charge, unquote. California sued FERC, claiming it is due a refund of $9 billion in gouged profits because the Federal Power Act didn't authorize FERC to approve a fluctuating market-based rate structure. The question is, does the governor-elect intend to settle a federal suit also? Mr. Schwarzenegger's announcement to settle the lawsuits comes on the heels of an article written on the eve of the election by investigative reporter Greg Palast. Palast, whose reports appear on BBC Television's Newsnight, said that the Los Angeles-based Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights uncovered in Enron internal memos regarding Mr. Schwarzenegger's secret meeting in May 2001 with the disgraced CEO of Enron, Kenneth Lay. The intent of the power company, according to Palast, was to sabotage the Davis-Bustamante plan to win back the $9 billion in illegal profits earned by power moguls. The plan has worked so far. Mr. Schwarzenegger should be questioned about his actions. And then there's a link to the Eureka Report. By the way, a remarkable article by Catherine Eureka from the Eureka Report constituted the vast bulk of For the Record program number 420. One of the reasons that I think the sexual harassment charges did not do the damage that it did, there was a very skilled counteroffensive by the Schwarzenegger camp, but the entire election was something of a political blitzkrieg. Schwarzenegger deliberately deceived, as he does so often, about whether he intended to run, and then announced in early August that he was going to run. The whole country, pretty much the whole state, is out to lunch for the month of August. Then it's the fall, time to get the kids back to school, football season starts, and so forth. And basically, all of a sudden, there was an election. And I think, in part, the recall election was something of a political blitzkrieg, literally a classic lightning war that in which the charges against Schwarzenegger really didn't get much chance to air. Schwarzenegger has obliquely dismissed the sexual harassment charges as old news, and in a recent tiff gave indications that he was going to have a private, basically a private eye, a respected private investigative firm look into these charges. This, I think, is very significant because this is a public issue, and he is going to use a private investigator. And when this came out, he basically promptly launched a very loud blitzkrieg against Bill Lockyer, the state attorney general. The San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, November 8, 2003, had this article by Linda Gledhill and Carla Marinucci, Dateline, Sacramento, Lockyer tells of harassment allegation. It reads in part, Attorney General Bill Lockyer said on a radio talk show Friday that he had been told 2 days before the October 7th recall election that Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger had done terrible things, unquote, to a woman within the past year. For the second day in a row, Lockyer talked about allegations of sexual harassment that had been leveled against Schwarzenegger, which the Attorney General termed a stain, unquote, on the incoming administration. Quote, what I know is third hand. It's not evidence admissible in trial. It's somebody coming up to me and said, hey, this terrible thing happened to my daughter-in-law last year, unquote, Lockyer told Ron Owens on KGO. Well, I don't know the facts, but I don't know what the facts are, but he's got to deal with these things. And skipping down, Friday's allegation, the first made against the incoming governor that might fall within the one-year statute of limitations of sexual harassment, happened just a day after Lockyer and Schwarzenegger had a public dust-up over whether the allegations against Schwarzenegger should be investigated. Schwarzenegger's chief spokesman accused Lockyer on Thursday of violating legal ethics by telling reporters he had advised the new GOP governor to go forward with an independent investigation of the sexual harassment allegations. It was charged that this was, quote, a violation of attorney-client privilege. Schwarzenegger isn't even governor yet, so that is absolutely ridiculous. What is interesting is the expressed desire by Schwarzenegger to use a private investigative firm to look into this. I wouldn't want to be one of those women making those allegations. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 434, Triumph of the Shill Part 2. Reichstag wildfire question mark, Reichstag wildfire question mark, being recorded on November 10th, 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.